You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
And now a word from our sponsor, Sixth Sense. Sixth Sense provides award-winning cloud-based automated endpoint and vulnerability management solutions to streamline IT and security operations. With its advanced platform, businesses gain complete visibility and control over their infrastructure, reducing IT and security risks and optimizing operational efficiency. With Sixth Sense, you'll get real-time alerts, risk-based vulnerability prioritization and remediations, and an intuitive automation and orchestration engine so you can focus on your core business goals, confident in the knowledge that your enterprise is secure, compliant, and running smoothly. Visit sixthsense.com to learn why enterprises choose them. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the CyberWire's Research Saturday. I'm Dave Bittner, and this is our weekly conversation with researchers and analysts tracking down threats and vulnerabilities, solving some of the hard problems of protecting ourselves in a rapidly evolving cyberspace. Thanks for joining us.
Essentially, Symantec receives billions of rows in telemetry every day. And one of the things that my team do is actually dig through that telemetry in order to hunt down new threats. And it was through one of these analytics that we were able to identify some suspicious credential dumping activity, which led us on to uncovering Pompilius and their attacks against organizations operating in the chemical sector.
That's Alan Neville. He's a principal threat intelligence analyst at Symantec. The research we're discussing today is titled Lazarus Targets Chemical Sector. And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its zero-trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust Plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zero-trust-AI. Well, before we dig into the details here, I mean, this centers around the Lazarus Group, which is out of North Korea. Can you give us a little bit of the background on them?
Yeah, so Lazarus itself is kind of more of a, would you say, an all-compassing name that mainly consists of a lot of different subgroups. Across Symantec themselves, we already actually track probably at least up to 15 different groups that are all kind of under that umbrella name Lazarus. And Lazarus was originally the name that was known as Hidden Cobra, which was used by the US government. Essentially, there's many of these different subgroups. We've split them out based on some of the separate activity that we actually track across Symantec. So we would have groups that we'd associate with North Korea, like Bluet or Ballworm, for etc. Which, for example, let's say Bluet, they would target individuals in South Korea using threats like Eagle Boss, mainly executives doing their business or working in South Korea. Ballworm, for example, is another group that we track, where they had previously hijacked software updates in order to install their malware. We had Cloverworm, which we've also published on in the past. This was essentially an espionage effort by North Korea, where they were involved in financially motivated attacks against crypto mining or crypto organizations. And some considered these groups known as like Springtail, one and the same, but when we start digging into that activity for Cloverworm, we kind of split that out into two different groups. So it's somewhat confusing in terms of where lots of different vendors track all the subset of activity under different names. And Lazarus has essentially become one of these umbrella terms which kind of encapsulates all of North Korean activity.
And as you mentioned, your team is tracking this particular group as the name Pompilus, is that right?
Pompilus, yeah. That's the group that we've dubbed for this particular set of activity.
And so this starts out with a continuation of Lazarus's technique that is referred to as Operation Dream Job.
Yeah, so Dream Jobs is quite interesting. There's actually been quite a bit of reporting about this over the last several years. It was first published by our colleagues in ESET in a blog around June 2020, where they specifically detailed a campaign which attacked defense and aerospace companies in Europe and the Middle East between like September and I think it was December 2019. And in that campaign, which they named Interception, made use of social engineering and relied on like a modular malware to collect and perform reconnaissance on targeted networks. At that time, according to ESES, the attackers made initial contact with their targets through LinkedIn. The attackers themselves had been creating profiles impersonating HR recruiters from international companies in the defense sector and aerospace sectors. And they used these copycat profiles to send job offers to their targets. And for any of those who may have showed interest in those jobs, they would then eventually send them like a password protected archive, which was either sent directly to them via email or may have a link to like one of those cloud providers like OneDrive to install their malware. And then later, I suppose in 2020, McAfee also documented a similar campaign. They released a blog where they detailed the malicious documents that were being sent to the individuals related to legitimate job offers at leading defense contractors. All of the organizations that were detailed in that blog had active defense contracts of varying sizes and scope, all with the US government. And then there was also additional reporting by Clear Sky. They had released a report where they detailed some further tactics of the attackers. For example, they began to impersonate legitimate individuals in companies, not just setting up fake profiles, but actually copying LinkedIn profiles from existing employees and using their images as well. They began to build up a reputation by adding other individuals within those companies to LinkedIn before they began reaching out to their targets, essentially kind of using the same means as before, like sending job offers. In those cases, they began leveraging other messaging platforms as well. So it wasn't just LinkedIn, but they began to branch out onto other platforms like WhatsApp or directly through SMS texts and even in Twitter. And then we'd also seen a blog that was published in January 2021 by Google, and they had observed similar campaigns. But in these cases, it looked like the attackers had shifted their focus away from defense and aerospace and started focusing on security researchers. In these campaigns, the attackers began to impersonate professional security researchers, setting up LinkedIn profiles and Twitter accounts, a lot of what we've seen previously. But they even went as far as starting to create blogs, publishing articles on exploit vulnerability research in an attempt to build up that reputation. One stage, they even created fake YouTube videos, supposedly demonstrating a zero-day exploit against Windows Defender. This was later proven to be fake. They had used these types of tactics as a means to build up a reputation. And then using that reputation would begin to reach out to other security researchers and begin to ask them would they like to collaborate on some vulnerability research, to the point where they would send them a Visual Studios project, which would essentially install some malware onto the security researchers' machines.
Well, let's dig into this particular campaign. What were you tracking here?
During this time, we had obviously been keeping track of all this activity, which we then began tracking as a separate group because it looked like very kind of unique characteristics in terms of some of the tactics and tools that the group were using. And around late, I suppose, 2021, we began observing a shift in some of the targeting by the actors, whereby they began to focus on healthcare and pharmaceutical sectors initially, retaining access in some of those organizations for up to several months. Similar to what we'd previously reported, we've observed the attackers leveraging various social media platforms, sending malicious documents with lures related to pharma and jobs, job offers, and identified potentially new undocumented vector as well, whereby the attackers were installing their tools via legitimate system management software tools to spread across the networks. We'd also observed the attackers targeting financial organizations that were heavy into cryptocurrency as well. As we continued to monitor the group in 2021 and then later into 2022, we noticed a second shift in their targeting, whereby they began to set their sights on organizations operating in the information technology sector, which included web hosting companies, some small-time registrars, and we'd also seen some IT support contractors as well. And then at a later stage, we start seeing a shift towards conglomerates. We believe that they had targeted these organizations in the IT sectors initially to build out some of their infrastructure. The majority of their command and control servers that they use are compromised websites, so it kind of makes sense for them to go after those organizations. However, there was another theory as well, that they were likely targeting these organizations as a means to get access to other organizations of interest, essentially, I suppose, performing a supply chain attack. And we noticed some of the other victims around that time were partnered with some of those IT contractors. In terms of the chemical targeting, as we began to, I suppose, dig into those conglomerates, we had noticed that majority of those victims actually operated within the chemical sector, specifically the machines that Lazarus were targeting at the time. All were related to machines that were being used to conduct research in the chemical sector, specifically around some projects that were being worked on in collaboration with different organizations.
Hmm. The research that you all have posted here includes a case study, what you tracked from an organization in the chemical sector. Can we go through that together, get some insights as to how Lazarus went about this?
Yeah, so in the recent victim that we described in the blog, we'd seen the victim themselves were operating in the chemical sector. They were part of a conglomerate. We believe that they had been initially sent some malicious emails that contained links to remote sites, and the user that they had targeted essentially had opened the email, clicked the link, which in turn was able to download and install a malicious DLL file onto their machine, which essentially gave the actors a backdoor access. So once that backdoor was installed and executed, it was used to download a second stage payload, which the attackers were able to leverage. And that gave them the ability to be able to execute arbitrary commands that were all being executed in memory. And they were able to use that access to install additional tools, potentially steal information from the infected machine itself. And in multiple cases where we observed them installing these tools, we had seen them leveraging Trojanized versions of legitimate projects like compression libraries. In some instances, we had seen them using system management software to install some of their backdoors on other machines once they gained that initial access. And again, that's probably all likely just to try to remain under the radar for as long as possible within those organizations. And I suppose after the attackers had gained that access, one of the first things we seen them do was obviously start to collect credentials to assist in that lateral movement. The attackers then began creating multiple scheduled tasks to ensure persistence as a means to run commands. They were leveraging batch files to do this in those cases. And we also observed them installing older versions of, I think we'd seen Bitdefender, which had software that was vulnerable to remote code execution vulnerabilities, which again was likely to allow them to execute arbitrary commands on harder to reach systems. Beyond those backdoor tools and the remote access tools that we've seen them install within that victim, it looks like they also were able to deploy tools to be able to take screenshots to monitor machines of interest. And this tool would take screenshots of browse web pages every 10 seconds and send those images back to the attackers.
Now, by what means were they ultimately detected?
The cases where these were initially detected, it was all through the analytics that our team actually developed. So like that, we collect billions of rows of telemetry that are submitted to Symantec every day. As part of that threat hunting effort that we actually do, we one of those approaches that we use would be to design a lot of these analytics to identify the suspicious attack behavior. It's usually through those that we were able to identify, and in this case, this is what we were actually able to find. We were able to identify some suspicious credential dumping activity that was identified through those analytics.
And so what are your recommendations in terms of protection and mitigation? How can folks best prevent this?
For recommendations for protection, first thing I'd actually recommend would be adopting a defense in depth strategy. So that would be using like multiple detections and protection technologies, essentially to try and mitigate risks at all point of the potential attack chain. I'd also recommend leveraging two-factor authentication where possible. And generally, this would be a good thing to do to help limit the usefulness of any compromised credentials. Standard things like restricting remote desktop protocol access or any other tools that can enable remote desktop access. Monitor any system management software that may be leveraged within your organization to ensure you have visibility of what's being delivered to your endpoints. And then also things like enabling logging of PowerShell and dual use tool usage as well. And I'd also recommend working with your own security teams and security vendors, review the protection information that's available, share to our blog or share to our other colleagues as well, to ensure all the steps have been taken to detect and block this type of activity across your organization.
Now, is your sense that the primary goal here was espionage as opposed to, because we're dealing with the chemical sector, as opposed to, you know, getting into industrial control systems, those kinds of things?
Yeah, as we began to dig into some of those recent victims, we quickly realized the attackers were clearly interested in chemical research. The organizations where we actually observed the attackers gaining access to, we were able to quickly identify that those victims had working relationships with each other. And we could see them specifically seeking out research materials, in these cases related to epoxy research that the organizations were collaborating on. And what was pretty interesting about epoxy research, it's not just glue at the end of the day. It actually has many other practical uses. Among some of them being solid-state fuels, as we know, North Korea have ramped up their missile testing since the beginning of 2022. And we believe it's likely due to the sanctions that have been imposed in the country, the fact they've been excluded from that wider scientific community. They're beginning to resort to stealing that type of research and intellectual property to further their own either nuclear programs or interests. What's also interesting about this is we've also seen other North Korean groups as well targeting the chemical sector for similar research recently. This is a group that we've known or that we track and we've also published on in the past, known as Stonefly. And at that time, they had been targeting, again, conglomerates, again, involved in research around super alloys specifically used for heat shielding. And it appears to be some sort of directive of theirs to collect this type of information.
Our thanks to Alan Neville from Symantec for joining us. The research is titled Lazarus Targets Chemical Sector. We'll have a link in the show notes.
And now a word from our sponsor, SpyCloud, the leader in operationalizing cybercrime analytics. Traditional threat intelligence is a thing of the past. Cyber criminals are stealing vast amounts of credentials, session cookies, and financial data every day, and it's hard to keep up. SpyCloud is the trusted partner businesses turn to fully understand their darknet exposure risk and neutralize threats before it's too late. SpyCloud alerts your organization as soon as an employee or customer's data appears on the darknet, so you can act faster than bad actors to prevent cyber attacks like ransomware, session hijacking, account takeover, and online fraud. With insights from the industry's largest repository of recaptured data, protect the digital identities and systems most important to your business. Get your free corporate darknet exposure report at spycloud.com/cyberwire and see what information criminals have in their hands today. That's spycloud.com/cyberwire.
The CyberWire podcast is proudly produced in Maryland out of the startup studios of Data Tribe, where they're co-building the next generation of cybersecurity teams and technologies. Our amazing CyberWire team is Rachel Gelfand, Liz Irvin, Elliot Peltzman, Trey Hester, Brandon Karpf, Eliana White, Peru Prakash, Justin Sabi, Tim Nodar, Joe Kerrigan, Carol Terrio, Ben Yellen, Nick Vilecki, Gina Johnson, Bennett Moe, Chris Russell, John Petrick, Jennifer Iben, Rick Howard, Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here next week.